We're having fun. I think I've been having fun for some time with this particular subject, this one God U.S. president's thing. I asked some of you from last week, did you enjoy that? And you apparently you did. And those of you who didn't get a chance to catch last week's presentation, it will help you a lot if you get that one, because it kind of sets the background, if you will, for this entire series. So I think it kind of helps us to see how could we have five, maybe six, United States presidents who have a view of God, had a view of God, just as we do here in this church and others of you do. And that is that God really is just one. He's not two or three. That gets very confusing, doesn't it? Some of these folks that we're going to be talking about, including John Adams today, would have said, that's kind of cheating. You're saying there's one God, but actually then you wind up, you've got two or three that you call the one God. That's kind of strange. So I think it's interesting. Today we're going to be talking about John Adams, who was the second president of the United States. It is exciting to me that there has been a revival of interest in Adams in recent times. He was kind of like the forgotten president for a while. He was overshadowed by the great George Washington, who was before him, of course. And then Jefferson, who came after him. How would you like to be sandwiched between those two giants? Well, it turns out that John Adams was kind of a giant in himself. He just doesn't get quite the notoriety and the interest that the other two did. But in recent times, in part, I think, due to this really landmark book by David McCullough, John Adams, aptly named. I guess you don't have to wonder what it's about. Huh? So, great book. I robbed this one from Pastor Mark. But if you just want to do some reading on Adams, some of you may have read it, but it's great. It's wonderful stuff. And it was the winner of the Pulitzer Prize. Happy to know. So it's no small book. You can take a look at that later if you'd like. Let's just dive in and see what we can learn here. If you are unorthodox, and we are, and you do believe that God really is one, there is one God, and God is one being, one individual, the Father of the universe, the Father of humanity, the Father of us all, the Father of Jesus Christ, that He, according to John 17:3, is the only true God. Well, and that's the testimony of Jesus. Then perhaps these things about our presidents, the presidents we're focusing on, are of great interest to us. And I think they would be. And maybe they give us some information that would be useful in talking to our friends about some of our beliefs. We say, well, you know, we didn't just go out and make this up in a cornfield one day. Actually, there are other people who've thought about this, and some people that we both know in common, so to speak, or have been important to us. And it would be interesting to know that they also shared this understanding and this faith with you or us. And we're not just making this up. I'm giving you an overview of what I have done on this and research. Actually, over the past 2 or 3 years, right now, I don't think there's a study like this one anywhere. No one has really delved into this before to actually put together a study of these five, maybe six. We have a secret one. We won't tell you who that is, right? I've already told you who the other five are in last week's study. But there's one more, and we'll keep that a secret for now. If you know, don't tell anybody, okay? We don't want to ruin the secret. So today, let's begin then. We're going to talk about John Adams, our second president. John Adams and his wife, Abigail. And before you young people start laughing at the way they look, just remember this. If you had lived back then, that's the way you would have looked too. That's the way they dressed, right? Someday, maybe somebody will be making fun of the way we dress today. I don't know, but we all enjoy it as we go. But these turn out to be two of my heroes in faith. And we'll talk about how that is. And I have to say, the more I have read and the more I've understood about Abigail Adams and her faith, she has become a tremendous hero to me. I think she's a wonderful person. In working on these studies, these sessions, I actually traveled some over the past couple of years, and I've made a trip up to Massachusetts to visit the home of John Adams and where they lived and spent time, and had a chance to kind of get close to him. I like to go and see things. I like to visualize. You know, I go there and then I can kind of begin to visualize what it was like to live in that home and what it was like for those folks. So anyway, the home that they wound up living in and spent their later years in was called Peacefield, and it's a beautiful place. Went and visited that and enjoyed it a lot. John Adams, the story on him is basically this. He was the second president of the United States. He was born in 1735, and then on, notice this date, by the way, July the 4th, 1826. Isn't that interesting? Who knows what was going on exactly 50 years before on that day? It was the day of the Declaration of Independence, wasn't it? Yeah. So this is an amazing thing. He lived to be 91 years old. He was a farmer, a property owner, which was really a big deal in those days. Well, it still is, but it was really great when you own property. And he was a lawyer. That's an interesting thing. He was, and this is what most people know him for, is he was an early American patriot, and he was a representative to the Continental Congress before there was a United States of America. He was a representative of the Continental Congress from Massachusetts. So he was early involved in the politics of the day. This is where it really gets interesting to the American public, and that is he was an architect and one of the most important, actually, of American independence. And he supported it. He was one of the great thinkers in that. I think he really was instrumental in bringing about the independence, the freedom that we know today in this country. He was the first ambassador to England after, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? After we gained our independence, England decided, okay, well, if this is the way it's going to be, then so we have an ambassador now from the United States to England. And he was the first. He was the first vice president under George Washington, 1789 to 1796, and then became the second president of these United States of America from 1797 to 1801. So that's kind of the short picture of a enormous, incredible, amazing life. These guys, I've said this of Jefferson, and I think it was true of Adams as well. I don't know how these people did it, but they accomplished more before lunch than I would do all month. I don't know how they did it. It was wonderful, exciting times. And these were wonderful, exciting people, I think. But I had hoped and still do that in time we may actually create a documentary, as it were, about these five, maybe six, U.S. presidents that had a particular one God belief that we share with them, in fact. Their views are our views in regard to the question of one God and how many God is. Very important to them, and as it is indeed to us. So I visited Peacefield, spent time there, beautiful place, and began to think in terms of what we might do regarding this documentary. So I hope it's still coming up. If it does, we'll have it on 21st Century Reformation one of these days. You'll be able to watch it, and you'll be able to say, Brother Dan told me about that. So, and there it is. It'll be wonderful. So this was the home place, if you will, for John Adams, the second president of the United States, after he and Abigail returned from England, where he served as our first ambassador to England after the Revolutionary War. And then, of course, our sixth president, John Quincy Adams, also lived here at the home, and then others after them of the Adams of that same family. So it was a beautiful estate, a beautiful place. The library behind me was actually built for John Quincy Adams, and by him and his folks were involved in that. But it's the first presidential library in America. This library houses thousands of the books and documents of President John Quincy Adams. Beautiful library. And it's interesting here that John Adams and John Quincy Adams, two of our earliest presidents, were non-Trinitarian, non-traditional, non-Orthodox, if you will, in their Christian views. They were both Christian, certainly, but they had very unorthodox views, were non-Trinitarian in their perspectives. Back in those days, they were referred to oftentimes as Unitarian, or we might now say Biblical Unitarian, because they did believe in the Bible, unlike our Unitarian Universalist folks, who are not very leaned in terms of the Bible and things of that nature. These were the real thing. These were true Unitarian, meaning non-Trinitarian believers. And that's why we're here. We're here to investigate, if you will, these two presidents and the fact that they were non-Trinitarian. What were their views? What were their perspectives? That needs a lot of work in editing and so on, but I was just showing you the kind of thing that we're thinking about doing and we've been working on. Back to Mr. Adams, and let's take a look at the what I'm calling notable firsts. He was in a position to be first in terms of some very interesting things, I think. And so we know he was the first president at the new Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's interesting that people don't realize George Washington never lived there. He was never in residing in Washington while he was president. John Adams was the first to actually reside in Washington, D.C., and also then the first to live in the White House. All this happened in 1800. He established the Library of Congress. I think that's a very notable thing. And people are familiar with the fact that Jefferson was involved in the development of the Library of Congress. That is true, but it is Adams who actually established that. He was the first president to have a son to serve as president, John Quincy Adams, who was our sixth president, as it were. And he was the only one of our first five presidents to not be a slaveholder. I thought that was an interesting fact about him. And and of course, the sixth, John Quincy, his son, was not a slaveholder either. So that's an interesting fact, I think. Another notable first for John Adams, and this is what brings us to this matter today and is of particular interest to us, and that is he was the first president of the United States to be, we could say, non-Trinitarian. He was non-Orthodox. He had a different perspective about God. He was certainly a Christian, he and his family, but as president, he took a different perspective from others about this business about one God, who God is. And so that's our issue today. So let's take a look for a few minutes at John Adams's religious background in history and see what we find from about that. His religious background was that he started out, he was from a Puritan and Calvinist background. And it's very interesting that there's quite a number of those folks who came to a one God perspective about the one God, who actually had been Calvinist. I find that very interesting because the Calvinists and the one God folks really wound up being very separate, very different from one another in other respects. But This is the background of many of them. His father wanted him to be a clergyman, which was a great role to play in those days, and still is. But he was vexed with the clergy, and he never entered the field. And so neither was he just a humanist, though. He kind of wasn't someone who was just thinking, humanism is the answer to everything. He was very biblically oriented. He was a Bible believer. He was a believer in God and in Christ. He was a Christian. But he didn't swing too far into the humanist camp because he said that he found that human beings had too many problems, and he couldn't solve all that either. So he didn't. Some of that came about as a result of his politics, and he discovered how awful that politics could be in a free society. Isn't that interesting? Happily, all that's gone away today, and we no longer have those bitter political issues, do we? That's right. So that's not okay. But John Adams was a Christian all of his life. He said, "I never write or talk upon divinity." He said, "I've had more than I could do of humanity." So he felt like he was not a professional clergyman. He wasn't a professional theologian. But yet he wrote and said many things that I think are very wonderful regarding the issues that are of interest to us. John Adams, and this is a quote from a PBS special, a public broadcast system special. They said, John Adams became a Unitarian. Unitarianism, a liberal strand of Christianity popular in New England, began in the liberal wing of the Congregational Church. Adams's childhood church subscribed to Unitarian principles 75 years before fully separating from the Congregational denomination. So we talked about these things in broader terms last time, and like I say, if you weren't here to hear that first presentation in this series, get it. It'll be available in time, probably on 21st or on this church's website. Adams was a long churchgoer. He was a member at Braintree, actually the first parish church. The church changed from Congregationalist doctrine to a Unitarian one in the mid-1750s. So again, we talked about this a little bit last time. And so the perspective was shifting from, quote, orthodoxy, okay, that's interesting, to this unorthodox view. From the Trinitarian perspective, that God is two or three different ones, to just God is one, the Father of us all, the Father of Jesus Christ. That's the one true God. John 17:3, huge, huge verse to these people. Who said that, by the way? Father, you're the only true God. Who said that? Jesus, yes. Okay, so that's an important passage to us as well. Abigail Adams, Adams's wife, was the daughter of a Congregationalist minister, and she also was one God in her perspective, and as I said, she's become one of my heroes, as it were. I'll only share just an item or two along the way in this series about her, but she was wonderful. She's fabulous. What a courageous person that she was. In fact, what courageous people all of these folks were that we're talking about in this series. They were wonderful. They were amazing. They were wonderful and courageous in the sense that they put everything on the line for American freedom and for what we have enjoyed in the 200 plus years since then in terms of freedom in this country. They put it all on the line, because what they were talking about wasn't necessarily so popular in the beginning. So when they supported the revolution, they were putting everything they had at stake. And all of those amazing people were. So, I think those same people were courageous not only in terms of those things, but their courage carried over in many cases to their faith. And that's why that they were willing to stand up against the tide and against the, you know, lean into the wind and say, well, we know what the Orthodox view is and all of that, but we don't believe it's biblical. We don't believe it's right. And that was, that took amazing courage. Abigail Adams was one of those. She was a tremendous spoke. Adams was not a deist. I'm going to just mention this in passing because this it becomes a really a great historical debate when it comes to Jefferson. And we'll be talking about Jefferson next week, and some might say that that will be our most interesting of all these characters. But we do want to talk about Jefferson and go into to his views. But people often say, well, Jefferson was a deist and that's that. Not really. It's not that simple, and we'll be talking about that next time. Actually, wherever the journey of life had taken Jefferson, he wound up on the same page with us in his later life with regard to these issues about the one true God. But what a great person. And we'll get back to that and talk about him next time. Adams was not a deist. What was a deist? A deist was this philosophy that got going in those earlier days than this, really, and carried over some. But a deist was a person who believed that God created the world and then took a very, very long vacation. He hasn't come back yet. He just set the world in motion and walked away. And so deist then, as deist, you don't pray because there's nobody going to be listening to you. As a deist, you just look at everything and say, well, God doesn't. He did what he did just making us, and then he took off. Well, that's what Thomas Jefferson is so often accused of, thought to have been. We'll talk about it. Actually, Adams clearly was not a deist. We just want to make that clear. He did believe in miracles. He believed in the resurrection of the dead. And in 1796, Adam denounced political opponent Thomas Paine, who really was a deist. His deistic criticism of Christianity in the Age of Reason, saying the Christian religion is above all the religions that ever prevailed or existed in ancient or modern times, the religion of wisdom, virtue, equality, equity, and humanity. Let the blackguard Paine say what he will. They really were very animated in their discussions back then and what they had to say. But so Adams was not a deist, and we'll take a look at that question with Jefferson in particular, because you'll run into that, we need to be well informed. How about that? Why shouldn't we, as God's people, be informed? Why shouldn't we be knowledgeable, in the best sense of the word, about our faith, our understanding, and issues that relate to that, including the things that we're talking about today? I've been singing the praises of Abigail Adams a bit. Let me mention her. She was, I mentioned earlier, the daughter of a minister, a clergyman. And she was knowledgeable of the scriptures, and she knew her faith. It would be so interesting that if you could pull up to a table with Abigail Adams, you ladies here today, and your faith, you would have the most enjoyable interaction with her and discussion with her. She would love to talk to you, and she would love to hear you talk about your faith in the one true God. But she wrote this. This is just a quote. In March 1815, she wrote this to her son, John Quincy Adams. She said, "I acknowledge myself a Unitarian, believing that the Father alone is the supreme God, and that Jesus Christ derived his being and all his powers and honors from the Father." She wrote, "There is not any reasoning which can convince me, contrary to my senses, that three is one and one three." So she left no room for wondering about where she stood about these matters. And what was important to her, too, John Adams, Abigail Adams, and others that we're going to be looking at in this series, as I said, they were courageous people. They didn't just say, oh, well, yeah, isn't this interesting? We have a different perspective on this. Isn't that nice? No, they didn't. They put their lives on the line for these things. And we, as we come to these issues and we think about, you know, the truth about God, what greater question could we talk about? Who is he? And is he several different ones? What are you talking about? Well, how does this work? I think the simplicity of the truth, that God is one. There's only one God, and that God is one. One individual, one being. You don't quite have the full equation right unless you have both sides of that. There's just one God. Yeah, okay. But I think that one God must be two or three different ones. No. And that's what these people are saying. They're saying, no, there's no such thing. The one God. There's one God, and he's just one individual. Simplicity. The complexity of the creeds and the complexity of the, quote, orthodox view. You get to call it what you want, I suppose. You can, when you get to say, well, this is orthodoxy. Self-proclaimed orthodoxy, we would say. But I love these people. I love their faith. I love the fact that they were willing to stand up against the crowd, the mob, as it were, and to take a stand that I think, very wonderful. 3 years later, she wrote John Quincy's wife, Louisa, and she said this, and she's writing actually about the creeds that had become so standardized and formalized, and Christians were required to recite these creeds. Anyway, here's what she said. She said, "When will mankind be convinced that true religion is from the heart, between man and his creator, and not the imposition of man or creeds and tests of religion?" So, I think that's very positive, very strong. Like I say, she's become one of my heroes. Back to John Adams. He made this statement once, and this left no room for wondering about him. He said, "An incarnate God? Ha! An eternal, self-existent, omnipotent, omniscient author of this stupendous universe suffering on a cross? Ha!" He didn't like that idea. He said, that makes no sense whatsoever, that he would have a son, a human son, that would suffer on a cross. That makes sense. But that the Almighty God who created all the universe suffered on a cross and died? How can God die? That makes no sense. If he's God, then he can't die. Isn't that the very definition of what it would mean to be God? You're eternal. You don't die. So anyway, John Adams said, an incarnate God, he said, this makes no sense. An eternal, self-existent, omnipotent, omniscient author of this stupendous universe. How wonderful all that is. Suffering on a cross, though? No. My soul starts. That means he startled, shook up by this thought. My soul starts with horror at the idea, and it has stupefied the Christian world. Wow. It has been the source of almost all the corruptions of Christianity. He said, if you mess up who God is, how are you going to get much else right? It's tough, isn't it? And if you think God is two or three different fellows or two or three different ones, then how does it ever get squared away from there? It's just everything's off on a bad foot, isn't it? It doesn't work. By the way, that was a quote that I took from this book, which also I owe to Pastor Mark, the Faiths, plural, of Our Fathers, by Alf J. Mapp Jr., who's since deceased, I think you said. But this is a nifty little book. Everybody should get a copy of this. It's a short book, very direct and to the point, not real detailed, but it does a really nice job of talking about some of the things that we're discussing in this series. So it's not written just about that. It's written about some of our early presidents, early fathers, as it were. But some of the easiest to read stuff that you would find is in this very easy book. I've of course, researched quite a number of books and a lot of materials in working on this. But that one I think is excellent. Very good. Let me play you another short clip that just to give you an idea of what we're working on about what hopefully may eventually become our documentary on these presidents. But and I hope this will come out. These are not so great, so this isn't the final stuff, but just giving you an idea of things that we're thinking about or talking about. We're back at Peace Field for this short clip. So it's very interesting to me that John Adams and Jefferson, our other non-Trinitarian president that we're considering, that Jefferson and Adams were comrades, as it were, back in the days leading up to the Revolutionary War and the Declaration of Independence. And through that time, through the war, they were close associates. But after the war, after the nation gained its independence, they went in different directions, politically speaking, and became severe rivals. They didn't really like one another during those years when each of them served as president, vice presidents. They just were not happy with each other. What's of interest, though, is that in their later years, their retired years, their semi-retired years, they struck up a friendship, a comradeship again, if you will. And there were many important letters between Adams and Jefferson. And much about Adams and Jefferson's religious views now come to the fore through their personal letters, their private letters with one another. That's exciting. So it's here that John Adams wrote to Jefferson many insightful, interesting considerations about their non-Trinitarian perspectives. And it's in this very place that Adams would have read letters from Jefferson about this. So we're very interested here. We want to look into or look at some of that correspondence between these two friends of later years and how that they came to see eye to eye a great deal in their religious views, their views about faith. So you get the sense of where we're kind of going in that project. I don't know when the actual documentary will be done, but you've got an advance, as it were, on the matter, as you see where we're going and some of these interesting things. As I have searched and researched and spent time working on this subject, and I felt like it was worth it. It's kind of been like a hobby for a while now. I've been just thinking about it and interested. But the further I've gone with it, the more interesting it's become. And I think it's a matter of no small note that people that we all highly regard and highly respect are actually on the same page with us regarding our views about the one true God. It's something to think about. It doesn't necessarily just in and of itself make it right, but it certainly, I think, should give the world pause to say, hey, some awfully good people, some awfully wonderful people, and some very important people as time has gone by. We see how important they've been. But they have had this same conviction, this same understanding. And if anybody should know about it, I think we should, shouldn't we? In some ways, we're their heirs, in a sense. We also share that same biblical perspective, the John 17:3 perspective. There's just one who is the true God. Father, you are the only true God. There's nobody who's the true God but you. Not two, not three, not a dozen. Just you. You alone are the one true God. So I think it's wonderful. It's interesting, and what I was mentioning in that clip just now is a lot of what we learn about their religious thinking is in their later years after they've retired pretty much from public life. And then that's the place where we learn about Adams more and Jefferson more and about their religious conviction. They didn't say as much about it in earlier times. They were too busy leading a revolution and starting a new nation. And they were not trying to be preachers, as it were. They were revolutionary leaders. But it's interesting that we do get a lot more perspective on their faith, their lives in terms of faith in those later years, and particularly in a lot of the writings between the two. So don't miss our next one in particular about Jefferson. We'll have an entire session devoted to him. And it's just so interesting. Very, very exciting stuff. So what do you think? Is this interesting stuff? I think it is. And worth learning and knowing something about. Amen?